Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're in for a very fun episode, as this is our end of the year recap of the entire year of the UFC. That is right, we're going to be going through the entire year of the UFC. I'm going to be talking about all the big signings, everyone who debuted this year, everyone who left the company, every single event, everything that went down. That is this episode. As well, in today's episode, we will be discussing NFL Week 16. That's right, we only have 3 weeks left of the NFL season before the playoffs begin, and we're going to be dropping your NFL Week 16 quick picks. Also going to be dropping your awards for the UFC in 2025. We got 9 different categories this year. I was able to go through, figure out which ones I think are both, and some we're actually going to be deciding live on this episode, which is going to be super exciting. And as well, I'll be giving my thoughts on part 1 of the final season of Stranger Things. That's right, Stranger Things season 5 has 8 episodes total. I have watched the first 4 that have come out. The next 3 come out on Christmas, and the final one comes out on New Year's Eve. So a lot of exciting stuff for you guys on the docket today. And we're just banging out episodes left, right, and center. You know, I recorded yesterday, was able to get out my recap of everything that went down in the past weekend, and now we're back giving you a nice little fun intro for today. So without further ado, let's jump right on into it. And we're going to kick things off, actually, with your NFL Week 16 quick picks. That is right, and there are no buys. There is no teams missing out. We have 16 games going down across 4 different days. That is super exciting. So, kicking things off, we have the Rams visiting the Seahawks, both of them coming in at 11-3, and the Seahawks are actually the favorites at -130. That is right. Rams are currently the number one team in the NFC. They are currently your NFC West division leaders, and they're on a little 2-game winning streak. And it's been a good season for both of these teams, both coming in 11-3. Last time they played, November 16th, the Rams won 21-9 in a very close matchup. And with the run that the Seahawks have been on, I'm really liking their odds here. Okay, I am really liking their odds. Another thing that's going to make this matchup so key is how good their defenses are. You know, that's what I'll say, is the Seahawks have the number one defense. Pretty sure the Rams is either the 4th or the 5th. Like, I kid you not, these are 2 of the top defenses in the NFL. This is a pivotal matchup for both of them. Worst case scenario for these teams, they draw, and the 49ers sneak in and may even win the division. It's so funny how stuff can just work out like that. But for now, both these teams are just about a lock for the playoffs. I know the Rams are, for a fact, a lock for the conference, so they've already clinched the conference, or at least making it. But yeah, exciting stuff all around. My prediction, going to go with the Seahawks. All right, and I've loved what I've seen from both of these teams, but when it comes down to how good both of these teams are, you know, it's one thing for the Seahawks to barely beat the Colts. It's another for the Rams to edge out the Lions in a barn burner. But when it comes down to matchmaking them both up against each other, I really like the Seahawks defense to shut down the Rams, as opposed to the Rams to fully shut down the Seahawks. So I'm going to go with the Seahawks to get it done. I'm really rooting for Jaxon Smith-Njigba in this matchup. You know, I have some playoffs ahead of me. You know, I have 2 weeks for a league with, I think, money. I can't recall if we have money or not, but, I mean, exciting stuff there. Then I believe I'm in the semifinals in 2 of my leagues. So fingers crossed there, rooting for both these teams to just put on a great performance. But in terms of a Thursday night football game, this is easily going to be the best Thursday night football game of the entire season so far. With that, we jump into Saturday. That is right, on 12:20 at 4 o'clock. We will have the Eagles going to Washington to take on the Commanders. And the Commanders won. They snapped their losing streak, defeating the Giants. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too much of an accomplishment, but Commanders win. They're 4-10. And for the Eagles, 9-5, snapped their little 3-game losing streak. This one's a lock. Eagles are -310. I mean, I would love for the Commanders to upset. It would just be hilarious. But if the Eagles win this game, they clinch a playoff position. They also clinch the NFC East, and it's all about guaranteed. Just about guaranteed that that's that's going to happen. So Eagles play the Commanders in two of their last three games, and I'm going to pick them in both of them. So Eagles over the Commanders, not much more to say. This Commanders team is pretty, pretty bad, and it's not pretty at all. We also have another Saturday game as the Packers visit the Bears. It's going to be a barn burner. Going to be exciting. I'm pumped for it. Bears are underdogs at home, and I'll tell you, I got to pick the Bears. I got to pick the Bears. They're an underdog team, and I just like this Bears team. I really do. I like this Bears team. I'm a Packers hater, and the Packers lost last week. They lost to the Broncos, and the Bears did exactly what they needed to, won their layup game over the Browns, and I'm pumped to see this. This is maybe going to be game of the week. I know that Seahawks and Rams game is going to be good, but this Bears and Packers game, look out. So, Caleb Williams, do your thing. DJ Moore, have a day, and I will say, depending on if Christian Watson is a go for week 16, I may be starting him. Just to let you guys know. Christian Watson, I may be running with him. I know maybe I shouldn't because I'm picking the Bears. But as of right now, 59% of ESPN is picking the Bears. That is the prediction rate for all the fans such as myself. And yeah, I'm a Packers hater, so easily going to ride with them. After that, we jump into some Sunday action. Bills heading to Cleveland. And I mean, just to let you know, Browns are plus 455 underdogs. And seeing what the Bills did to the Patriots, there is no chance I'm picking against them. I think they've got their mojo back. I think I've got their swagger. And Josh Allen, do your thing. I'm excited to see what the Bills do. And here, especially for the Bills defense, this is a great opportunity for them to show up. They've been doing kind of mediocre. And for the Browns, the defense is the only highlight of this team. They need some more stars on offense. You know, the biggest star they have is literally Shador. I kid you not. Shador and Quishon Judkins, which might I say, Quishon Judkins, if you want to do well, I wouldn't be mad. So yeah, Bills over Browns, not even close. Next up, Chargers visiting the Cowboys. And for some reason, the Chargers have been underdogs like every week. And I wish I was honestly a big betting man because I would have been making so much money. They're on a 3-game heater. Just won the entire season out over the Chiefs, which is such an accomplishment for them. And yeah, if the Broncos weren't in their division, they'd easily be winning the AFC West. So for the Cowboys, you know, it's the season's over. Season's over. There's not much highlights. There's not much benefits to go over for them. You know, George Pickens had a great year. Javonte Williams started the year hot. Dak had a really good campaign at first, but they just couldn't string together wins to save their lives. I mean, just a lot of tough losses here and there, and I think the Chargers capitalize. Get another win here. Chargers over the Cowboys. Take it to the bank. Next up, Chiefs visiting the Titans. And this one has me curious. This one really has me curious. You know, I think at one point I said that I was picking the Chiefs in every game this year. Clearly that hasn't worked out as they're 6-8. They've missed the playoffs by a mile. And I think I'm more so, you know, wondering, is this a winnable game for the Titans? I really wonder it. They're 0-7 at home. It's been obviously an awful season. You know, next week they play the Saints and they play the Jags. So I do hope that they can win at least one game at home. And I feel like this could be a winnable game. I mean, they put up 24 on the Niners. That was impressive. They put up 24 on the Seahawks. That was impressive. They put up 20 on the Chargers. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, their only really bad loss in the last while, I mean, I'd say since November, has been the blowout loss to the Jags, 25-3. Other than that, they've put up 20 on all these teams. And in terms of the Chiefs, I mean, I don't even know. They've lost Mahomes. So you're going to have Gardner Minshew under center, which does not bode well for, you know, some Rashee Rice chemistry or anything. So I'm really confused if I want to pick the Chiefs here. I really am. I feel like it's a lock, but they've gone 1-5 on the road. They've lost their last three, and, you know, I mean, to be fair, I mean, it's, you know, when I look at their losing streak, when I look at all the losses they've taken this year, I mean, Chargers, Eagles, Jaguars, the Bills, the Broncos, the Colts, no, they beat the Colts, the Cowboys, Texans and Chargers, they haven't been bad losses. They really haven't. And I really think Titans would be a super fun underdog pick, but I just got to go with the Chiefs here. You know, I can't pick the Titans. I know they may have more team chemistry, but I just can't bring myself to pick the Titans. Next up, Jets visiting the Saints. And, man, this one's interesting. I love the Saints here. I really do. I'm done going with the Jets. You know, the Jets are just such a team where it feels like they should win, and they just never freaking do. They just never win. It's just not what they do. And for the Saints, after starting 2-10, they've knocked off the Dolphins, or not the Dolphins, the Buccaneers and the Panthers. I think they continue their little run. And honestly, ending the year playing the Saints, Titans, and Falcons, I think the Saints could end with a 7-win season. I really think it's possible. So give me the Saints over the Jets. I mean, this Jets team is just, oh, they're awful. They are actually just awful. Next up, Vikings visiting the Giants. I'm going to be excited for my Minnesota Vikings, who I'm obviously picking, just to want to get that out the way, to take on Dart. You know, I'm interested to see how Jackson Dart does against the Minnesota Vikings defense. It's going to be really fun to see that chemistry play out. And, you know, it's super fun, but this Giants team is on an 8-game losing streak. Though two of their wins have came at home, but they're bad. They're so bad. The Giants have not won a football game since October 9th. It's been 2 months since they've last won a football game, and I don't think it starts here. Now, if there would be a team to beat, heck yeah, it'd be the Vikings, because the Vikings are just absolutely just not it this year. But, you know, in terms of all the teams that are mediocre, I think the Vikings are the best in the mediocre. We've won their last two. We're working our way out of our negative point differential for the year, and plus we've gone 4-4 on the road. We've won, you know, majority of our games on the road. So give me the Vikings over the Giants any day of the week. Next up on the schedule, Buccaneers and Panthers. This is for the division. Super fun. Both teams are 7-7. They play in two of the last three. This is what I love about football. This is what makes it fun. Now, Buccaneers, 2-game losing streak. Panthers, 1-game losing streak. It has not been pretty for either of these teams. And when I do look at them, when I look at what I've seen, the Buccaneers losing to the Saints was brutal. It really was. But their other losses, the Bills, the Rams, the Patriots, the Lions, yeah. Yeah, those are high-level teams. And for the Panthers, you know, they're still not good. You know, they've been winning some games. They're 7-7, but I just don't have them winning here. I got the Buccaneers winning at least this game in Carolina in terms of the final three. Maybe they sneak away. Carolina sneaks away one in Tampa. But for this game, I got Buccaneers over the Panthers. And then our final noon game, Bengals at Dolphins. I mean, can we pick the Bengals? Is that still a thing we're doing? I don't know. I thought the Bengals would actually, with Joe Burrow back, be able to beat the Ravens. They couldn't even score. And for the Dolphins, you know, they lost to a Steelers team, which was just a tough game. Tough game in Pittsburgh. You know, it is what it is. Other than that, they knock off teams they're supposed to knock off, such as the Saints, the Jets, the Commanders, and they also beat teams like the Falcons and Dolphins. So, or not Falcons, the Bills, I mean. So, I'm going to go with the Dolphins. They're +170 at home against the Bengals. Yeah, give me the Dolphins. Now, I do think, I heard, they're making a quarterback change, which could you know, change things up. But if A-Chain's just getting the ball, then they'll find success. Absolute banger game at 3:05 in Denver as the Jaguars visit the Broncos. And people, you got to take the Jaguars serious. 5 straight wins. They have almost a 100-plus point differential, and they're 10-4. They're 10-4. It's been a crazy season. Now, unfortunately, Jaguars, after seeing the Broncos knock off the Packers, I'm not picking against them. The Broncos started 1-2 and have not lost since. They have also gone 7-0 at home. Give me the Broncos over the Jags. I mean, this is just a fun game. Going to be a fun game. And if there would be a team to beat the Jaguars, I would really love the Jaguars here. But I'm going to say that with how good their defense has been, Jaguars get locked up. Next up at 3:05, Falcons visiting the Cardinals. Battle of the Birds. Battle of the Birds, one will say. And yeah, I'm just going to pick the Falcons here. I cannot pick the Cardinals. I'm so sorry. This Cardinals team is so bad. They're so bad. I know the Falcons have been not pretty this year in 5-9 record, but they had a great showing knocking off the Bucs on Thursday Night Football last week. And for the Cardinals, 6 straight losses. They've gone 1-6 at home. They're 3-11, and they just cannot put anything together. So poor Jacoby Brissett. I absolutely love him, but Falcons over the Cardinals, lock it in. Also, at 3:30, Steelers visiting the Lions, and for some reason, they're underdogs. They are, and we need to, you know, talk about the fact that the Lions are 8-6. We need to talk about the fact that, yes, they've had an amazing offense, but we also need to talk about the fact that all of their games have been close. I mean, it really has, and when you look at everything that's happened since November, you know, they lose to the Vikings, they then beat the Commanders, they then lose to the Eagles, then they beat the Giants, lose to the Packers, beat the Cowboys, lose to the Rams, and now they land with Pittsburgh. So they've kind of been going win-loss, win-loss. If we look at that statistically, it's going to tell us that the Lions are going to win. And for the Steelers, They're 8-6 already. We know they're only going to win one of their last three because they finish every year 9-8. So give me the Lions to beat the Steelers. I do think it would be fun if the Steelers would win this, but I just don't see it happen. And then our final 3:30 game, Raiders playing the Texans. I would love to see Brock Bowers and Ashton Gentry get a win. It's not going to happen. Plus 800 underdogs. The Texans are minus 1,350. Now, if you're going to throw any money down, I mean, I easily would, I would easily put money on the Raiders here, but yeah, we're not going to do that. Texans are red hot. Red hot. They've revived their season. I think we all thought they were going to miss the playoffs. They've won 6 straight, and if the Jags lose, they could overtake the division. So, must-win game for the Texans here. Right now, they're locked in at the 7th spot for the playoffs. And, honestly, I'm rooting for them. They're not too bad of a team to not root for. So, Texans over Raiders, get it done. I also have Nico Collins. So, don't be afraid to pass to him, CJ Stroud. And then, our last two games of week number 16. Patriots visiting Baltimore. And I don't understand why in the world this is the case. But the Patriots right now are plus 130 underdogs. Are we stupid? Are we silly? I know they lost to the Bills, but that's the Bills. Okay, this Ravens team is atrocious. They're 7-7. Now, they need to win this game if they really want to make the playoffs, but Patriots are 11-3. Patriots have gone 6-0 on the road. Patriots are beating the Ravens. I don't even want to give this time of day. It makes literally no sense. And then we wrap things up on Monday. 49ers visiting the Colts. Give me the 49ers. Give me the 49ers. Look, Colts have fallen apart. They're on a 4-game losing streak. Phillip Rivers is fun, but I don't have him tossing up this 49ers defense whatsoever. 49ers have currently won their last 4. They're right on the tails of the Rams and Seahawks, and with a 10-4 record, they're just looking to solidify their playoff spots. So give me the 49ers over the Colts, and dare I say they're going to win 30-15, which means the total point score will be 45. If you're curious, you can actually put that in on ESPN. So if you're wondering, go and do that. But yeah, those are your NFL Week 16 quick picks. I think I'm more excited before I head to Chicago. So I always go to Chicago for Christmas, so I won't be able to upload on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So, or actually Friday, actually 22, 23. Yeah, until Friday or Saturday maybe. So it's going to be interesting on what happens with that. But I'll be curious to see what the playoff picture looks like next week when we discuss. But those are my quick picks. Go lock it in. Go make some money. And honestly, don't follow some of them because we picked a lot of favorites just because, you know, I've been done picking underdogs the whole year. But without further ado, I say we dive in right now to our entire recap of the year. Should I do that or should I do Game of Thrones? Not Game of Thrones, Stranger Things. I'm thinking it will make more sense if we discuss Stranger Things right now or if we go and discuss the entire year of the UFC. So I'm thinking actually we're going to do our Stranger Things talk real quick because I just want to let you guys know my thoughts on what's happened so far in the season. So that's what we'll do right now. But if you weren't aware, the final season of Stranger Things is out. It's red hot. It's popular. And it's good. It's super entertaining. It's fun to watch, and I also have fun watching it. I really do. I've grinded out these first 4 episodes. Of course, the Volume 2 comes out on December 25th, and then the finale goes live December 31st. And what is it called? It's called The Right Side Up, which seems only fitting. So I'll be excited to see what happens on Christmas when I watch those episodes, but as of right now, here's my thoughts on what's happened so far. I mean, we debut in episode 1 is good. You know, we kind of drop back into 1983. We see that Will is caught by Vecna. We also see that, like, this little tentacle thing is pumping things into Will, and that is basically giving him superpowers, one that we learned at the end of episode 4. And it was a pretty good entry. It really was. We then jump back 4 years. That's right. Can you believe it? Only 4 years or 5 years has passed in the actual Stranger Things universe, and we get basically a new look at Hawkins, and the military is all over. They've been closing off rifts everywhere. You know, that big cliffhanger at the end of season 4 was basically answered by they basically have just patched everything up and Hawkins is under quarantine. And they also have a base in the Upside Down and everyone's hunting for Eleven, but she's actually training with Hopper and Joyce. And then you have Will, Lucas, and Mike. You know, they're trying to lay low. You know, Dustin's continuing to honor Eddie. He's getting in fights with the jock. Super fun, nerdy stuff. And You know, it is what it is. Steve, Robin, Jonathan, and Nancy, they're all working at a local radio station where they actually relay coded messages to the group about opportunities to sneak Hopper into the Upside Down, which they call crawls, to find Vecna's hideout. And that's the entire premise of episode one, is them going on a crawl. And basically, you know, they all, it takes the entire team of all, what is it, 12 of them now or something. They all get together and try and get Hopper in there, and they actually successfully get him in. And then as they're, you know, going to track him while he's in the Upside Down, Dustin is attacked and viciously beaten at Eddie's grave. It is honestly very unsatisfying. I hope he gets his lick back in volume number two. And, you know, everything is going well until a Demogorgon attacks the military caravan in the Upside Down, forcing Hopper to take shelter within the Upside Down. Everyone's like, oh no, is Hopper going to die? I don't know. But then we go back, and Will telepathically witnesses this attack and starts to, like, see through the eyes of the Demogorgon. It's very weird. It's very odd. And then we end the episode with the Wheeler residents being attacked as a Demogorgon comes and snatches Mike and Nancy's younger sister, Holly. And we also had this little tease in episode one of Holly's imaginary friend, which is Mr. What's-It. And let me just say, it was super creepy. It was super creepy, it was freaky, and it was a good cliffhanger and a good episode to open up the final season of Stranger Things. And then we jump into episode two, which is called The Vanishing of Holly Wheeler. And we learn that Holly has been taken into the Upside Down, and lo and behold, the big reveal is, who is Mr. What's-It? It is, of course, Henry, who is, you know, if we didn't all know, it's Vecna. If you didn't know, it was Vecna before he became Vecna. But we jump into episode two, and the Demogorgon has attacked Mike and Nancy's parents, and they're in the hospital. And, you know, they both, you know, I thought they died, but right now, actually, as we're heading into volume two, you know, they're still alive, still in the hospital, still kicking it, which is good. And then we have Eleven's in the Upside Down, and she meets up with Hopper, and then they're searching for Holly, and they run into a giant wall. And this is one of the big mysteries of this season. What is this giant wall? Picture the Game of Thrones wall of ice, but it's basically just a wall of, like, the gross, whatever, upside down tentacles, bubbliness. It's pretty gross. So, you know, they're all dealing with that. And then Jonathan and Steve are competing for Nancy's attention, which I absolutely love. And then Dustin finally shows up. They're like, where were you, man? What'd you do? And he's all bloody and beaten. He's like, oh, I ran into a sign on my bike. Kind of comical. And honestly, people are critiquing the acting here. I think the only dorky actor in this is Robin, if I'm being honest, which is hilarious because her father's a legendary actor. But I honestly believe she's the only weird actor, if you ask me. Or, like, the doesn't look as professional, if you'll think. But we continue going on. Lucas is trying to still get Max out of her coma. She's still kicking it. And then Nancy and Mike basically start theorizing about Mr. What's-It, and then they basically learn that, yes, Mr. What's-It is Henry. And, you know, Robin then proposes they use Will's telepathic link to Vecna's hive mind to try and find Holly in the Upside Down, and they go back to a playground, which Will had seen, like, some, you know, vision of, and you learn that Derek, I cannot remember his last name to save my life, but basically Dip S-Word Derek, who is this hilarious little, you know, larger kid in, Holly's grade, who was like the bully, and you find out that actually Vecna's going to be targeting him. So their new plan is that they're going to have to save Derek before someone gets to him, and that's what they learn, and that is what gets us into episode three, which is the Turnbow Trap, and that's his name, Derek Turnbow. And this episode might have been my favorite for one reason, and that is Erica, Lucas's younger sister. She is my favorite character on this show. So Vecna, of course, is targeting Holly's classmates. They learn, and now he's after Derek Turnbow. And as we're dealing with that, Hopper and Eleven fail to break through the massive wall and are then ambushed by soldiers, but then they actually, like, kill them, and they take, like, the leader hostage. Very interesting. I believe his name was, like, Akers or something, Lieutenant Akers. And they learn that Dr. K is holding Vecna at the base, or so they think. Will, Nancy, and Mike then basically inform the group that Vecna lured Holly by claiming he was her imaginary friend, which then helps them come up with the idea to use Derek as bait to trap the Demogorgon, which they know is going to come and get him, and they're going to put a tracker on him to then find Holly in the Upside Down. So everyone splits up. They all get weapons from Murray, who I absolutely always love seeing Murray. They enlist Erica, and basically Erica is friends with Derek's sister, so she goes to the house, and she puts a bunch of, you know, sleeping pills, whatever, in a pie. feeds it to him, and suddenly the father falls asleep, then the mother, then Derek, and then the sister's like, Erica, call 911, and she's like, I can't do that, and she pulls out a syringe with the stuff, and it's like, this is what you're gonna get. It was so dark, but so funny. I absolutely loved it. And so they all get the family unconscious, transport them to a safe barn, and they convert Derek's house into a trap for the Demogorgon. I kid you not, if Home Alone had been like this, I mean, those robbers would have been impaled or something. This was just awesome. They were cutting out the floor, they were putting barbed wire, they were putting like spikes and stuff. It was great. But then the plan unravels when Derek wakes up and Will realizes the Demogorgon has now located their group. So the Demogorgon escapes, everyone gets attacked but somehow survives, and then we learn at the end that Holly is actually in Henry's childhood home. It's like this paradise or something, you know, everything is looking wonderful, and he's like, there's one rule, just don't go into the woods. And what does she do? She goes into the woods, there's monsters out there, but little does she know, she finds Max. And Max is basically, you know, she's in a coma in Hawkins, but she's trapped in the mind of Vecna here, in, you know, with Upside Down or wherever they're at. And she's like, Holly, you're going to be safe with me, and this is what's going to happen. And that's what brings us to episode 4, which is called Sorcerer. And the whole time, you're kind of thinking, what is Sorcerer? What does Sorcerer mean? What could be the meaning of this? And we'll learn at the end of this, but this is the longest episode so far. We kick it off. Hopper and Eleven infiltrate the military base intending to kill Vecna. They defeat Dr. Kanner's soldiers and discover that Vecna is not inside the base. She is not in the Hawkins lab, but it's none other than Callie from season 2, the other one. And she might have been number 6, number whatever, but if you remember from season 2, she was the Indian girl who also had powers like Eleven. She was running with a bad group. It was one of the worst storylines of the early seasons of Stranger Things, but you're kind of like, oh my gosh, she's still here, she's still alive, and she is now going to help Eleven try and kill Vecna. Very entertaining. Max then basically explains to Holly that they're trapped inside Vecna's memories, which is then nicknamed I believe it's called Camazotz by Holly. It has something to do with a Wrinkle in Time book, and Max has remained there ever since her brief death, and it's just been kind of going throughout Vecna's memories. The group that Will is with is then attacked by a Demogorgon until Dustin, Steve, Nancy, and Jonathan chase it into the Upside Down as they drive through a portal in their car. Meanwhile, the military has detained all the children, as they've kind of learned, you know, since Holly went missing and Derek, that, you know, these monsters are targeting these children, so let's get them to our military base. We then learn from Will that he sees Holly and 3 other children restrained by tentacles, similar to what was happening to him in the little flashback in episode 1, and that there's empty spots for 8 more, which means there's 8 more targets that Vecna's after. Will's group infiltrates the base to smuggle the children out of Hawkins. Of course, nothing goes well. And then just when you think it couldn't go any worse, the Demogorgons burst through the Upside Down. They come into our world. They're breaking in everywhere, just through these portals, targeting everyone. And then looking like the most badass villain I've ever seen, Vecna comes through in just this immortal form. He looks like a king. He looks like he's been amped up. And he murks a bunch of these soldiers. It's more gory than I expected. He's violent. He's powerful. He is deadly. It's absolutely crazy. And just as, you know, he does what he needs to do, comes and speaks to Will, basically says, like, you were the easiest children to manipulate because your mind is weak or something. It was so dark. He then leaves and then sets all the Demogorgons to kill all of Will and his friends. And, you know, he's saying that all these children are perfect vessels to reshape his world. And then just as all the Demogorgons are about to kill Lucas and Robin and Mike and everyone, all of a sudden, Will uses his mind powers to stop all of them. And similar to how, you know, in early season 4, all those people were dying from Vecna, like snapping their limbs, same what happened to Max, Will does that to the Demogorgons, and his nose starts to bleed, and Will Byers now has the same superpowers as Eleven. I mean, holy cow, Will went from the nerdy kid to now being this elite guy. And yes, if you were paying attention to all the subtle hints, Will's gay. Will is definitely gay, and there's no reason for Will to be gay, but he has a crush on Mike, which is hilarious, because Mike does not swing that way, we're pretty sure. But yes, Will has superpowers, he saves the day, and it's going to be all chaos when we head into Volume 2. So, it's exciting stuff. It really is. It's really good. I'll say the first 4 episodes are an absolute great spot to start us out, and, you know, I'm pumped. End of chapter four gets you hyped, and that sorcerer, which is the episode's name, is Will. Will is now a sorcerer, and Will now has powers, and he's going to be the one to help take out Vecna. But yeah, the final three episodes for Volume 2, or not the final three, but of course we already talked about the finale, is called The Right Side Up, probably going to be a very happy finale. But as Chapter 5 is called Shock Jock, don't know what that means. Chapter 6 is Escape from Kamzataz, which is probably going to be Max and Holly escaping. And then Chapter 7 is The Bridge, so I don't know what The Bridge means, but I did watch the little 2-minute teaser trailer, and I could just tell that it is going to be a absolute chaotic end to Stranger Things. I don't really know who's going to survive. You know, I know they're going to merc some people here and there. You know, not everyone's going to survive. But, you know, I'm definitely seeing Hopper sacrificing. I definitely think Eleven might make a sacrifice, sadly. Definitely her new friend, or, you know, her sister or whatever, is definitely not going to make it. I could see Will sacrifice himself. Maybe even Robin. Maybe Murray. But, you know, it's going to be a crazy end of Stranger Things. And after Christmas, I'll be back to discuss what has happened. But yeah, that's your little recap of the first four episodes of Stranger Things Season 5. It's crazy that it's already coming to an end, but it's been good. It's been so much fun. And speaking of coming to an end, the year of UFC 2025 has come to an end, and it's time. It's time to recap everything that went down, all the big moments, everything that I thought was shocking, everything you could ever imagine. Let's dive right on into it from the beginning. So for 2025, we had 42 total events in the year. And I don't know if this was planned or if this is just a coincidence, but the first and last events of the year were both on a 13th. January 13th was our first event, and December 13th was our final event. We also had 13 total pay-per-views this year, as long with, 42 minus 13 means we had, 29 different fight nights, which actually aligns with what I was discussing. We had 520 total fights this year, and we had 21 title fights, which I'll also be ranking every title fight of the year, so stay tuned for that. We bust that out on a podcast. We also had a number of fighters either be released or retire this year. Of course, some notable ones, Abdulrazak al-Hassan, who was actually in the running for a comeback of the year. He was on the opposite side, but always entertaining. Alex Caceres, if you didn't know, actually signed with Dirty Boxing in May. Alex Caceres is no longer in the UFC. Alvin Hines, who had one of the funniest runs in heavyweight division, takes a short notice fight and then pops for steroids after losing. I actually saw him fight live in person at a lower level MMA event, I believe last year or earlier in the year, I can't recall. After those, we also had, of course, Anthony Smith retire in April. He was brutally beat down by Zhang Mingyang in just unfortunate fashion. We had Antonia Shevchenko, the younger sister of Valentina Shevchenko, retire in March. Armin Petrosian was released. You had Ozek Maksum get released. Brad Katona was released. Brian Battle being released after missing weight multiple times. That was shocking. He's been killing it outside the UFC. Bruno Silva's gone. Chris Barnett is gone. Chris Weidman retired in January. Didn't even realize that. Clay Guida was released in January. We also had Dominic Cruz retired in February. Forgot about that after a fight against someone. I can't even recall who he was supposed to fight. The fight didn't come through, and he just chose to retire. So, of course, the great Dustin Poirier retired in July. Probably the biggest loss we had this year. Time caught up with him, and it was time to go. Guram Kunladze was released in April. I had so much potential, or I thought so much would come of him, but just never could really get it going. Same with Hakeem Dawodow. He was released in June. Featherweight. Henry Cejudo retired in December, the last big retirement of the year. Holly Holmes was released in January at her request. Funny enough, didn't even realize that. You also had Isaac Dalgarian getting released. We'll be mentioning him in just a second, but he was involved in the betting scandal in the UFC. Jarzynia Rozenstruik getting released in February. Very odd move there. Funny enough, Jalen Turner retired in March and then came back and absolutely killed Edson Barbosa. Completely forgot he had retired. John Jones retired this summer. Another man who just hung it up. But is he ever really gone? I don't know. Jose Aldo retiring in May. Another legend of the game. We also had Justin Taffa get released, lower level heavyweight. You've had, a number of names here as I'm scrolling. Marco Sergio de Lima. He was, of course, the man who was knocked out by Derek Lewis in 30 seconds with the flying knee KO. Martin Boudet getting released in July. The fact he was released, that we still have guys like Mohamed Usman on the roster, is just baffling to me. Molly McCann retired in March. Of course, the great Molly McCann. Paul Craig retired in September. Actually, do miss me a little, Paul Craig. Tony Ferguson signed with the GFL. Remember, he won a boxing matchup, and the GFL actually never came to fruition. Uriah Faber was released in January. I have no idea how he was still, like, on the roster. He had easily retired. Walt Harris was released in March. He had never actually ended up fighting, unfortunately. And Yanal Ashmaz was released in November. He is Israeli. I don't know what's going on there, UFC. You have to answer some stuff. We also had a number of debuting fighters this year. Of course, some of the names I mentioned are going to be on our list of rookies of the year. We had Aaron Pico debut. He was a big prospect coming over from Bellator. And he was brutally knocked out by Leroy Murphy, one of the KOs of the year. Abdulrahman Yakyayev debuted this year. That would believe. Where did he debut? He debuted at UFC Qatar, and he came off of Season 9 of the Contender Series. Absolutely thunderous debut for him. Alexa Thanera probably had the best women's debut of the year. I believe she went 2-0 with two submissions. You also had Alice Pereira, who was the youngest fighter, I think, in women's history. She was like 19. She, of course, lost, but still cool to see. You had Ateba Gaudier debut this year. He went 3-0 with three round one knockouts. Exciting stuff. Austin Vanderford debuted this year. Of course, the husband of Paige Van Zandt. You also had Ozmak Bekov debut this year, who came in with two back-to-back round one knockouts. And then he was knocked out in round number three. Alexander Topuria debuted this year, the older brother of Ia Topuria. Very exciting stuff. Ante Deleje, absolute killer out of the PFL and Bellator. And he went 1-1 with a round one knockout and getting knocked out in round number one. You also had Axel Sola debuting this year at UFC Paris. He was a big prospect coming out of Cage Warriors. He was able to win his debut. And Bosinger Susukarev, who might have won Rookie of the Year had he been able to get a ranked shot, but the kid fought twice in like 4 days. It was insane. Great stuff from him. You also had Beatriz Mesquita debuting. She's some BJJ, IBJJ, whatever, black belt women. She had a great debut. Billy Alicana having not too bad of a year, taking a short notice fight against Bogdan Guskov and then picking up two wins in his respective categories, which is very exciting. You also had Cameron Ralston make his short notice debut after coming off of the Contender Series. He picked up a big win over Andre Petroski. Of course, Cesario Olukajacek, we mentioned last podcast episode, the younger brother of Michael Olukajacek. Number of notable people all around. Dante Johnson coming off of the Contender Series, also winning his debut. Elijah Smith remaining undefeated this year. He was a really good killer, came in. Islam Dulatov, of course, debuted this summer. He's, of course, the model from Germany. The dude is literally mogging everyone. Super exciting. Iwo Baranowski, Jacob Wooklock, some killers out of Poland. Jacoby Smith, oh my gosh, making just an absolute impact in the welterweight division. You also had Josh Hokit coming off of Season 9 of Dana White's Contender Series. Kevin Vallejos, which may be my Rookie of the Year. We're going to be discussing Rookies of the Year to end out the episode, but I'm still deciding on who I think has won it. Malcolm Wellmaker probably would have won it had he not been upset by Ethan Ewing, I think his name was. It was a crazy upset. Love to see that. Who else did we have this year? Patricio Pitbull came over to the UFC. Obviously went 1-1 with two boring fights, but hey, made it over to the UFC. Rizvan Khudiyev, who was literally just given a shot against Curtis Blaydes, lost a split decision and has just dipped since. I think he has a fight with Ryan Spann coming up early 2026. You got Shem Rock coming over from the Cage Warriors, did not win his debut. Talshan Teixeira, who starched Justin Toffa in 30 seconds and then was given Derek Lewis, who he knocked out, one of my favorite main events of the year. Quillen Sakyaid, who is on our short list for fighter rookies of the year. Yaroslav Amosov debuting on the final card of the year. Excited to see what 2026 has for him. And of course, Yuzhry Bulgori has finally made his way to the UFC. He is, of course, someone who has fought in Alex Pereira in kickboxing throughout his career, and he won his debut against Azamat Bekov, who we had also mentioned. Number of fighters were also suspended this year. Walt Harris was, of course, suspended until July of 2027, and he was promptly cut. Armin Tsarukyan was actually on suspension until January of 2025, and then was able to come back. Conor McGregor is currently being suspended until March of 2026, if you weren't aware. Osmat Mirzakhanov was actually suspended until May of this year. He ended the year on an absolute bang. You also had Sean Strickland get suspended until the end of 2025 for getting in the ring and just beating up someone who beat his teammate. Just the most random thing ever. And other than that, nothing else too notable. We had an Ultimate Fighter this year. Of course, you had Joseph Morales defeating Ali B. Idris to win the men's flyweight, and Daniil Danchenko defeating Rodrigo Cenzionato to win the welterweight division. And I do want to shout out, actually, our boy Joseph Morales, who was actually ranked for a time. He was number 15, and he's actually going to be a pretty good fighter, it looks like, at flyweight. So that is exciting to see. We had a number of title fights this year, a number of fight nights. So let's dive in and check out each and every one. So kicking off the year, you had yourself a little UFC Vegas 101, and it wasn't too bad. You know, as far as Apex cards go, you, of course, had Mackenzie Dern submitting Amanda Ribas in round number 3 with an armbar with 4 seconds left. Little did we know Dern would go on to become champion later in the year, so that was just super exciting for her. You also had Santiago Ponzinibbio having a great comeback win against Carlson Harris. And on the list for comeback of the year will be Cesar Almeida versus Abdulrazak Al-Hassan. Abdulrazak Al-Hassan just about had Cesar knocked down. They get back to the feet, they start swinging, and Cesar lands one of the best knockouts of the year. It was knockout for the year for a good amount of time, just clips him, and Abdul just goes flat, just like springboard, plops down to the canvas. Just amazing. We also had our first fight of the year, Roman Kopylov versus Chris Curtis, where of course Roman Kopylov landed a head kick with like 3 seconds left, and it was ended up being a 1 second knockout for Roman Kopylov. Just amazing stuff for Roman. He had a pretty rough year, and same for, you know, Chris Curtis. After this, nothing really went well for them, but overall that was a great moment. You also had the debut of Austin Bashee, who unfortunately ran into the prospect killer Christian Rodriguez, who took out another. You had Punahele Soriano landing a 31-second knockout of Uros Medic. You had Marco Tulio making his debut, knocking out Yair Portaria. You had Jacoby Smith making his debut. You had a lot of exciting stuff on this card. You even had Fatima Klein, who actually had herself a fantastic 2025, 3-0, and now she's ranked. She may be on the shortlist for Women's Rookie of the Year. We don't do that category. That may have to be a thing next year. But overall, start off the year pretty good with a little UFC Vegas 101. And then right after that, we jumped into a pay-per-view, UFC 311, and it is still one of the best pay-per-views of the year. It's one of the best events of the year. Now, we started off 5 decisions, you know, kind of whatever. You know, Tiger Lembekov wins. You had Rinya Nakamura losing his first professional bout. I think Perez picking up a massive win. You also had Grant Dawson winning. Bogdan Guskov then got us going with a submission of Billy Elekana after losing round 1. Osmat Bekov debuted and knocked out Zachary Reese. And then Peyton Talbot, who had honestly one of the craziest 2025s, lost a decision to Ryony Barcells. If you didn't know, Ryony Barcells had himself an amazing 2025, going 3-0 at almost 40 years old. So congrats to him. But after that, we got into the main card, and it is by far one of the best main cards. It was literally a perfect main card. Every fight delivered. Starting us off, Rainer Day Ritter makes easy work of Kevin Holland, submitting him in round 1. Both of those guys staying very active this year. We then had Halton Almeida defeating Sergey Spavik in a performance of the night TKO. Just a really fun grappling matchup with 7 seconds left. Halton Almeida was able to land the ground and pound finish. This was super entertaining. Then Jiří Procházka, Jamal Hill. Talk about Jiří Procházka going to round 3 and knocking out both his opponents this year. I mean, I love Jiří Procházka, one of my favorite fighters, and seeing him knock out Jamal Hill was so satisfying. This is one of my favorite fights of the year. It's not fight of the year. It's nowhere near the best fight of the year, but it's just one of my personal favorites of the year, and especially just watching the dogfight between these two was absolutely awesome. Then Mirab Dvalishvili, Umar Nurmagomedov, quite literally my favorite title fight of the year. I don't know if it's going to win my fight of the year, but I tell you guys, this was phenomenal. This was utterly just amazing. Umar takes the first 2 rounds, and then Mirab wins the last 3, including just toying with him in round number 3. I mean, this was fantastic. I absolutely love this fight. And then the main event, Islam Makhachev just makes the easiest work of Hinato Moicano I've ever seen. Just casually going back and forth, casually going back and forth. I don't know if Hinato shot or if Islam just like took him down casually, but immediately takes him down, wraps up a Darsan. It was night-night from there. So UFC 311, easily one of the best pay-per-views of the year. And it's funny because it was the first pay-per-view of the year. After that, we headed to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, for fight night Adesanya versus Nazardeen Imavov. And Nazardeen Imavov having himself all year. I mean, talk about the fact he knocks out Israel Adesanya 30 seconds in the round 2. And it was just brutal. It was a bad loss for Adesanya. He tried to recreate when Alex Pereira got checked in the nuts by Jamal Hill and then told the ref to stand down, then proceeded to knock him out. Quite literally the opposite gets eye poked when the ref goes to step in, pushes the ref away, and then Nasruddin just knocks him out with the next punch. It was unfortunate for Adesanya, but it is what it is. Also on this card, you had Bogdan Grodd making his debut, knocking out Lucas Alexander. Obviously, he didn't end the year well, but it was a good moment here. Terrence McKinney submitting, or actually knocking out Demir Hadzovic in an entertaining fashion. Shamil Gaziev knocking out Thomas Peterson, which is always fun. Fair Zayam picking up his first win of the year. Your fight of the night was Vincius Oliveira versus Saeed Nurmagomedov. That was a super entertaining fight. And then Sergey Pavlovich and Jarzynia Rozenstruik was so bad, they cut Jarzynia. Like, it was so bad. Sergey Pavlovich, I think Tom Aspinall broke him when he knocked him out. It kind of makes me sad, Tom. Why would you break my boy, Sergey Pavlovich? And then the co-main event, MVP versus Shara Magomedov, the first professional defeat for Shara. Just a boring fight. Just two guys who fight a weird style, and just nothing was gelling between either of these guys. Then after that, we had the worst pay-per-view of the year. I know we're going to do another ranking separately where I rank every UFC pay-per-view of the year, but let me just tell you, UFC 312 was just atrocious. I watched the entire thing, and we had some good moments. Of course, Quinlan Sakia versus Anshul Jubilee was fantastic. You also had Rong Zhu taking on Cody Steele in one of my favorite fights of the year. And then other than that, you know, Topura, Wang Kong both handsomely win their fights. You know, Tom Nolan picks up a win. Gabriel Santos gets the second finish of the prelims, submitting the hometown boy Jack Jenkins. And then the main card. The main card was just so dull. You know, Jake Matthews, Francisco Prado fight to a decision. Then Jimmy Crew, Rodolfo Bellotto fight to a decision. Not even a decision, a draw. They fight to a majority draw. And it was just kind of like, are you kidding me? Then Tashan Teixeira knocking out Justin Tafa was kind of entertaining. I know the hometown boy is Justin Tafa, so it was a bit sour. But then, I mean, you know, actually, no, I've actually decided I'm not going to do my awards. We're just going to do this recap of this just to kind of not just overload this episode. So this is just going to be our full year recap, and then we're not going to be doing our awards on this episode, in case you're just realizing that now. But Zhang Meili versus Tatiana Suarez and Justus Duplessis versus Sean Strickland is legit 10 rounds of action back-to-back, 50 minutes of actual in-ring fighting, which, by the way, is more like an hour and a half of real time. And it's all boring. It's all boring. You know, I'm going to go more in depth to this maybe in the next episode or something. But Zhang Meili versus Tatiana Suarez is quite literally Zhang Meili loses round one by Tatiana Suarez landing a knockdown. And then, not a knockdown, a takedown. And then Zhang Meili wins the next four rounds and just can't finish her. And it's literally, I'm pretty sure, it's like 17 of the 25 minutes is just fought in the grappling. Just so boring. And then Duplessis and Sean Strickland is kind of the adverse. There's no grappling. It's just boring back-to-back striking. And there was one moment where it almost got exciting with Justus Duplessis, you know, opening the nose of Sean Strickland, breaking it, and then just not hunting enough for the finish. So UFC 312 was a doozy, but, you know, this year overall was pretty good, so it was only one doozy out of many successes. Following that, though, we went from Australia back to the States, and we had three straight fight nights in a row. First up, UFC Vegas 102, which, like I said, the Apex events this year were 10 times better than they've been any other year. UFC Vegas 102 was your run-of-the-mill, event, but we starting it off, I mean, Walter Walker landing a heel hook here. Little did we know, I mean, like I said, I was going to do my awards on this episode, but I'm going to save it just so, you know, everything's a bit newer when we discuss it. But Walter Walker had three separate submissions this year and may win submission of the year. It's going to be weird when I talk about it, but Walter Walker, just a legend this year. Gabriel Bonfim, of course, submitting Chaos Williams. Gabriel Bonfim having himself an amazing year. Great bounce back year after only one fight in 2024 and starting off here with a bang. Rafael Estevam continuing his undefeated run by first now beating Jesus Aguilera here in just, you know, decent fashion. Angela Hill picked up a win. Jose Delgado made his debut, knocking out Connor Matthews. And then on the main card, I mean, Nazem Sadikov breaking the nose of Ishmael Bonfim, pretty entertaining. Emin Shabazian landing a round one knockout is always entertaining. Watching Calvin Kattar, you know, the downfall of Calvin Kattar has not been entertaining whatsoever. I'll say it's kind of sad, but watching Yusuf Salahuddin was entertaining. And then the main event, Cannoneer Gregory Rodriguez, one of the best main events of the year. I kid you not. It was so entertaining. Two knockdowns for both men. You could honestly say a comeback for both of them. It was just amazing, just super fun. And UFC Vegas 102 was a success. After that, we went to Seattle, Washington for Fight Night Cejudo and Song, and it easily was one of the biggest failures in terms of a main card that I've seen. But the prelims, best prelims of the year, hands down. We start off the card with 7 straight finishes, and of our first 9 fights, 8 are finishes, the other one a fight of the night. The only last bad 3 fights were the final 3. So, kicking it off, Modestus Bukauskas absolutely kills Rafael Sequeira, one of my favorite knockouts of the year. Nosutin Ruzoboyev makes easy work of Eric Makako on short notice. Austin Vanderford wins his debut, knocking out Nikola Verkhaninov. Then Ricky Simon knocking out Javed Bashrat. Just what an amazing performance. Modestus hits him with a straight, and Javed just slumps right down. Just amazing. Mamsurel Dumalik gets tested with Nick Klein, and he passes, knocking him out. Melchizedek Costa begins his campaign for Fighter of the Year. I mean, Melchizedek Costa, when we talk about Fighter of the Year, throw his name in the hat. I mean, this dude here submitting Andre Feely, fantastic work. And then Ian Kudalaba submitting Ibo Aslan. I don't know who I thought Ibo Aslan was, but that boy had an awful 2025. After that, Alonzo Benefield and Julius Walker had a fight of the night. And then Gene Silva. If you may not know this, but Gene Silva was not on people's radar in heading into 2025. He was like, oh yeah, he's a good fighter. But starting here, knocking out Melsik Bogdasari in round 1, put everyone on the map, and it propelled him to big heights in 2025. After that, Rob Font, Gene Matsumoto, pretty dull fight. Rob Font wins a split decision, which a lot of people thought he didn't. Anthony Hernandez grapples Brendan Allen to a decision, and then Song Yedong, Henry Cejudo, was just stopped prematurely for an eye poke to Henry Cejudo or something. I don't know what was going on, but yeah, just super screwy, just super unfortunate, but we leave it in the past. After that, UFC Vegas 103, Manel Cape knocking out Asu Almabayev. What a year for Manel Cape, 2-0. 2 knockouts, and he's now the number 2 guy on the planet. You can't get much better than that. You also had Cody Brundage knocking out Julian Marquez in just a goofy fight. Nazrat Akpasaryan and Esteban Rivas giving us an amazing fight of the night. Hyder Emile winning an interesting split decision over William Gomez, and knockouts from Sam Patterson and Mario Pinto. But other than that, just a run-of-the-mill Apex event. Wasn't even that bad, though. That's what I'll say. Following that, we got into UFC 313 in March, and this one was very, very interesting. Very interesting is all I'm going to say. So we kick it off just 2 run-of-the-mill, decisions, and then Carlos Hill knocks out Ox Morono. Entertaining. Bruno Ferreira submits Aaron Petrosian. Joshua Van kicks off his campaign, defeating the undefeated Ray Tazura. Love Joshua Van. I'm going to mention this in another video, but I had Joshua Van be my highest riser for flyweight. I had no idea he would climb to the heights that he was. Then we kicked off the main card with one of the best knockouts of the year, Mauricio Rufi spinning back kick to Bobby King Green, just knocking him out cold in 2 minutes. Oh, it was amazing. Then Amanda Lemos and Yasmin Lucindo, no idea. You thought it was a good idea to put this on the main card, but this killed any excitement. Just a boring grappling fest. Then Ignacio Bohomenes submits Jalen Turner, which actually led to Jalen Turner's premature retirement. Then Justin Gaethje, Rafael Fiziev, fight of the night. Just simply amazing. And a lot of people forget this is the only time Justin Gaethje fought this year. Just like, dude just dropped in for a fight of the night rematch against Rafael Fiziev, which it was supposed to be Dan Hooker, so shout out Fiziev taking it on short notice, but still entertaining. I don't know if it was closer than the first fight. I would say maybe, but I thought Justin Gaethje won pretty handsomely. And then just the crazy arc of the year for Magomed Ankalaev and Oxpera, who I never thought they would rematch during the year, but Magomed defeats Oxpera in just a boring, boring fight. And funny enough, I had a flight to North Carolina or South Carolina in the morning, and I stayed up late to watch this. And I was up until 1 in the morning. I had to be up at 3 for my flight, and it was just awful. It was awful. I was so tired by the time I arrived. And yeah, it wasn't even worth it because Magomed Ankalaev and Oxpera was just a stinker. But we continued on with March, which was an interesting month. UFC Vegas 104, Vettori and Dolidze. There were some positives on here. We kick off the card with 4 of the first 5 fights being finishes. Carly Giudice and Priscilla Castueda with 2 amazing women's knockouts. Andre Lima submitting Daniel Perez, and Carlos Vera having a shocking upset of Josias Moussasa submitting him. You also had Waldo Cortez Acosta beginning his 2025 campaign, knocking out Ryan Spann. Kevin Vallejos also starting off his year with a knockout of Shang-Mu Choi. Brenson Ribeiro submitting Dyer Nurzaghozi. Damon Blackshear and Landon Kimura. We had back-to-back round 2 Kimuras on the same card, which is pretty cool. Alexander Hernandez defeating Kurt Hallball was whatever, and cheating Chukani, knocking out Eliseo Zaleski Dos Santos with a knee. That was pretty cool. And then Roman Dolize, Marvin Vittori just putting on five rounds of boring apex striking. It was a doozy, but overall, a lot of fun finishes. We then headed from Vegas to London for UFC Fight Night, Edwards versus Brady, and a lot of decisions. A lot of decisions, no knockouts. We did have one of my favorite comebacks of the year, Sean O'Bannon over Pooja Tomar. It was awesome. It was awesome. And I'm going to mention this again when we talk about comebacks of the year, but I literally like turned off the TV because I was like, dang, Sean O'Bannon just got knocked out. And then I looked back and she submitted her the next round and I had to go back and rewatch the fight and go, holy cow, how did she survive that? So that was entertaining, but yeah, then just a string of just run-of-the-mill decisions. I mean, it got to a point you're kind of like, oh my gosh. You had Chris Duncan submitting Jordan Vucevic, though. Alex Thanera making her debut, submitting Molly McCann, which actually led to Molly McCann's retirement. Kevin Holland winning a performance of the Boat Knight over Gunnar Nelson, with literally just destroying him over three rounds. That's what he won it for, performance of the night for destroying. Carlos Ubrich defeating Jan Blachowicz in a striking affair, and then Sean Brady destroying Leon Edwards. I mean, you have to understand, like, this was Leon Edwards right after losing his championship. Sean Brady was just kind of, you know, someone, not even like a somebody yet. And here he is. He just destroys and submits him in round four. It was pretty crazy to see. After that, we ended March going to Mexico City in Mexico for UFC Fight Night, Moreno versus Usyk. And these Mexican cards are just, you never know what you're going to get. You know, we had some fun knockouts. Esteban Gaudier having his first knockout of the year with Jose Daniel Medina. That was awesome. Melkis Acosta picking up his second win of the year. Lupe Godinez picking up a win. Jamal Emmers landed a knockout. David Martinez debuted and had great success knocking out Samuel Oliveira. Raul Rosas Jr. won his decision. Always a good year when Raul Rosas Jr. wins. Unfortunately, he didn't have another fight the rest of the year. Edgar Cerez submits CJ Vergara. Manuel Torres knocks out Drew Dober. Then the main event, Brandon Moreno, Steve Usyk, kind of just a boring five-round striking affair. But they both kind of got what was coming to them eventually later in the year in terms of Brandon Moreno getting finished and Steve Usyk finally picking up a win. So we'll mention that later. But Mexico City was whatever, and March was just kind of a mediocre month all around. And when we jumped into April, you know, another Apex event, UFC Vegas 105, Josh Emmett versus Leroy Murphy. Very dull main event, very forgettable. I mean, the only benefit to come out of it is that Leroy Murphy thankfully won. The positives on this card, though, we did have Ryze McKee landing three knockdowns, picking up his first and last UFC victory. Downey Barbosa picking up a round one arm triangle. You had Torres Vinny and Robert Valentine in a, you know, I'd say a forgettable fight, but it's memorable for all the wrong reasons of just being just awful. And then Oney Osborne landing a knockout over the upsetting Luis Garule. Brad Tavares picking up a win. And Chang Ho Lee putting on an entertaining performance over Cortavious Romeos, leading to a performance bonus. But yeah, nothing much to be remembered there. But I'll tell you what we do remember. UFC 314 in Miami, Florida. Oh my goodness, ladies and gentlemen. This was awesome. I actually know some of my buddies that were there. I mean, crazy stuff. Kicking off the card, submission from Nora Cornoli and Marco Tullio knocking the daylights out of Trayson Gore. Boring split decision, then Michael Kudasek knocking off Cedric Dumas. Julian Arosa knocking out Darren Elkins. Chase Hooper defeats Jim Miller. Vino Janidova defeats John Chionin. Is what is. Then Dan Ige on our list for comebacks of the year is just casually down two rounds to Sean Woodson and then just unloads and knocks him out in round number three. Just so random, like a standing TKO. Very interesting. And then we jump into the main card. And the main card went 4 of 5, only one doozy. Starting it off, Dominic Reyes knocking out Nikita Krylov. I mean, it looked like the Jose Aldo Conor McGregor knockout, like bar for bar. Dominic Reyes just hitting a little step back, hitting him with the straight as he comes in, follow up punch. Amazing stuff. Then Gene Silva, Bryce Mitchell. One of the best press conferences leading up to a fight was Gene Silva and Bryce Mitchell. Some of the hardest bars I've heard from two fighters here. And then Gene Silva just knew what to do, mutilates Bryce Mitchell, and gets the job done. Then Yair Rodriguez versus Pitbull, Patricio Pitbull. Yeah, it sucked. It sucked. We don't even need to talk about it. It was so boring. It was so dull. Killed the vibe, but luckily, Patty Pimblett, Michael Chandler lit the place back on fire as we finally saw the coming out of Patty Pimblett as he destroys Michael Chandler. And as a Patty Pimblett stan, as a Patty Pimblett supporter, this was amazing to see, leading to the round number three TKO. Just amazing. And then a fight of the night, Alexander Volkanovski, Diego Lopez, just two gladiators going to war. And when Diego Lopez almost knocked out Volk at the end of round two, I was losing my mind. I was like, there's no way, there's no way. And now they're rematching in February. Can you believe that? Or actually, it might be end of March, actually. I think they're going to be rematching. Or not March, end of January, the final event of January of 2026. They're going to be rematching. So UFC 314 was fantastic, and it will be on our list for event of the year. Then, going on with April, rounding it out, we head to Kansas City, Missouri. And Kansas City treats us to a, you know, interesting event. We kick it off with four straight finishes, which you just can't beat. Then, of course, you had the retirement of Zhang Bingyang and Anthony Smith, where Zhang Bingyang just absolutely kills Anthony Smith. It was kind of sad, kind of funny at the same time. You had David Onama defeating Giga Chikadze, which actually ended up earning him a main event, funny enough. Same for Randy Brown. His knockout of Nicholas Dalby was one of the best knockouts of the year. Also won fight of the night. You could also say it's a comeback of the year for Randy Brown. That was super entertaining. You had Ikram Makhachev knocking out Andre Munez in round number one. And then the main event, Ian Garry, Carlos Prates, just a weird main event. You know, Ian Garry is like handsomely wins the first three rounds. Carlos Prates does nothing. And then Carlos Prates just unloads in round number four and five and just somehow can't put away Ian Garry. But hey, it is what it is. I'll say Kansas City wasn't that bad, but the main event was a bit draining. We then got into May with four events. Kick it off, UFC Des Moines, Iowa. What? We're in Des Moines. Remember watching this at our local college bar and, you know, I did pretty decent on my predictions for this, but overall, I mean, a couple of good moments. Kwang Lee, guy from Minnesota, getting a submission victory. Julian Robertson getting a TKO. Azamat Bekov knocking out Ryan Loader was entertaining. You also had Mason Jones and Jeremy Stiffens going to war. Daniel Rodriguez knocked out Santiago Ponzinibbio. Rayardé Ritter became the first man to defeat Bo Nickel. And then Corey Sandhagen just utterly took it to Deiveson Figueiredo, got the round two TKO, and earned himself a performance bonus. So good stuff there. After that, UFC 315 in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. I swear Canada just always gets some odd fights, I tell you that. We open up the card, Beksad Amakad knocks out Brad Katona, loved that. You also had Marc-Andre Brawayut landing a knockout on here. Modestus Bukakis picking up a big win over Ian Kudalaba. Jasmine Jesse DeVicious submitting Jessica Andrade was entertaining. Mike Mallet and Benoit Saint-Denis both getting finishes. Natalia Silva having her breaking out moment, schooling Alexa Grasso. Amin Zahabi almost getting knocked out in round number three against Jose Aldo, only to bounce back and win the round. Oh, so entertaining. And then the final two fights, just Valentin Shevchenko winning a 48-47 decision over Brandon Fiorot. And then Jack Della Maddalena and Bilal Muhammad actually put on a banger of a main event. I'll say that. They went to war. They fought hard. And only Jack Della Maddalena could bring out a fight of the night against Bilal Muhammad. But both of those guys did not end the year on a high note. So rough showings from them. We ended out May with two Apex events. First one, UFC Vegas 107. Better than, or not 107, 106. Michael Morales versus Gilbert Burns. We didn't know how good Michael Morales was until this fight, and he killed Gilbert Burns. Like, I've never seen Gilbert Burns kill before. Two knockdowns, 33 significant strikes to five. Was taken down and immediately got back up. 3 minutes, 39 seconds, all it took. You also had Marcos Acosta picking up his third win of the year in a fight of the night over Julian Arosa. And then a number of other finishes on this card. Do gotta give a shout out to Hyung Sung Park. Won a fight against Carlos Hernandez, which actually ended up earning him a main event opportunity. Denise Gomez got performance of the night, knockout of Elise Reed. Luiana Santos landed a key lock on Tanera Lisboa. Yadier Del Valle won his debut over Connor Matthews. Or actually might have been his second fight, can't recall. Jared Gordon landed a nasty knockout of Thiago Moises. And Gabe Green picked up a win in the UFC. So at the end of the day, kind of forgettable, but wasn't too bad. Which brings us to the worst event of 2025, and it was UFC Fight Night, Blanchfield versus Barber. And you know how many fights were on this card? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Only 9 fights were on this card. And, you know, we kick it off, or at least Arlene and Raoni Dos Santos. You know, I always clown the first two women to always fight. The fights are always boring. But these two women, random fight of the night, random banger. If you really want to show your friend a good woman's fight and be like, oh, you want to know? Let me show you two unranked women who are just going to war. Elise Ardeline and Raoni Dos Santos, just an absolute war. forgettable decision. Then Jordan Livett submitting Kurt Holubo was pretty entertaining. Back-to-back-to-back decisions. Then Dustin Jacoby knocking out Bruno Lopez was a highlight. Ramiz Brahimaj submitting Billy Ray Goff was pretty cool. And then Matheus Gamrot and Ludwig Klein ended up being the main event. And it's not even regarded as the main event because as the fighters are about to walk out, like literally like getting ready to walk out, Macy Barber is ruled as unable to compete. Just ridiculous. Just ridiculous. I remember watching it like, are you kidding me? The event's just over. Like, I was expecting nothing of this, but that's really all I get. And to make matters worse, it was literally just Matheus Gamrot grappling Ludwig Klein to death. So, very unfortunate ending to a very unfortunate card, and that was how we rounded out May, which kind of signaled in the first half ending of the year. It always kind of feels like June is the second half of the year, and luckily, June got going with a bang, and the rest of the year never slowed down. Kicking off June, we had one of the, you know, more underrated pay-per-views, I'll say, of the year. UFC 316, Merab Dhoshaili versus Sean O'Malley, and honestly, it was pretty good. Pretty good event. You know, there were a couple L's here and there, but overall, I think this card was decent. We have Quinlan Sakyad getting his second win of the year. Jusang Yu having one of the knockouts of the year over Jekka Sarah Guy. You had Wang Kong picking up her second win of the year. You had Waldo Cortez Acosta picking up another win. Osmat Mirzakhanov finally returning, knocking out Brenson Ribeiro. And Joshua Van getting himself a nasty knockout over Bruno Silva. I mean, that was a beautiful knockout. Jumping into the main card, Kevin Holland submits Vicente Luque with his signature anaconda choke. I mean, who was expecting that? Who was expecting that? Literally all of us probably should have been expecting that. Then the two doozies, Mario Bautista and Patchy Mix. The debut of Patchy Mix just was awful. Awful every which way around. And Mario Bautista, you know, still not earning fans with this performance. Then Joe Pyfer almost has a highlight reel round one finish of Kelvin Gastelum and instead can't finish him, leading to those two just boxing each other around for the last two rounds, which is just so boring. But then Kayla Harrison becomes the undisputed women's bantamweight champion, submitting Julia Pena and making everything right in the women's bantamweight division. And then Merab Dhoshaili submits Sean O'Malley. Might be submission of the year. It was utterly ridiculous, utterly fantastic, and you couldn't ask for a better ending to a pay-per-view in the year of Merab waged on. After that, we headed to Atlanta, Georgia for UFC Atlanta, Usman versus Buckley, and there were a lot of decisions. A lot of decisions on this card, but shout out to our finishes. Shout out to our finishers. Phil Rowe and Angelusa. Phil Rowe beating the brakes off of Angelusa. The finish here is legit. Phil holding Ange's face almost like a high school bully in a movie and just bash him in, bash it in, bash it in, bash it in. I mean, it was ridiculous. And then Jose Ochoa knocking out Cody Durden 11 seconds into round number two was utterly insane. They were like, come on, bring it. Come on, bring it. Literally goes against each other. Uppercut. Follow-up punches. That's it. Night-night. And then, of course, Malcolm Wallmaker's faceplant KO of Chris Muatino. Oh my goodness, just amazing, just simply amazing. And then Michael Chiesa decision win. Paul Craig and Rodolfo Beato is a hilarious no contest. Alonzo Medifield and Omar Sy. Omar Sy loses his first professional fight. Mansour Abdelmalik and Cody Brundage is overturned to a draw in weird fashion. Ronnie Barcelos grapples Cody Garbrandt to a decision. Edmund Shahbazyan can't put away Andre Petroski. And Rose Namajunas and Miranda Maverick put on a boring decision. But Usman and Buckley, you know, one fight of the night. It's unfortunately one of the few main events I missed this year. But from what I heard, it was decent. Usman picked up the victory. And for being a fight of the night, it looked pretty one-sided to me from all the highlights I saw. But hey, overall, decision fights all around. But when the main event ends with a bang, you know, sometimes it's pretty good. After that, we headed to Baku, Azerbaijan. That's right, UFC Azerbaijan. And it got worse with the decisions. Only two finishes on the entire card out of 13 fights. I mean, ugh, yikes. Yikes every which way you look at it. But other than that, looking around, nothing too memorable on this card besides the Nazim Sadikov and Nicholas Mota fight. I mean, that was easily the biggest highlight of the entire card. Fight of the night, performance of the night. Nazim Sadikov might have won comeback of the year for this one. I mean, utterly just ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. Love this matchup every which way you look at it. Mike McGarlby then submits Tofik Musayev in round one, which was all right. Curtis Blaydes and Rizvan Kuniyev. I already mentioned Rizvan Kuniyev, but just a random shot. They're like, who's this big Russian guy? I don't know, but let's have him fight Curtis Blaydes, and he fights into a split decision.
Oh, well. High fall Fazeev, Ignacio Bahomadez. Fazeev makes it in the grappling to pick up a win. And then Khalil Roundtree Jr. and Jamel Hill. What a weird main event. I mean, honestly, just such a weird main event. Just two guys, like, holding back. At the end of the day, it was literally just Khalil Roundtree Jr. just getting the better of Jamel Hill. I mean, overall, very dull, very boring, and very forgettable. But we ended June with a bang. Maybe, might be the event of the year. UFC 317, Topuria versus Oliveira. Just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. I mean, it's up there. It's up there in the rankings for sure. Jacoby Smith and Terrence McKinney getting finishes. Jose Delgado knocking out Hydra Mill in 26 seconds. Gregory Rodriguez's legendary knockout of Jack Rebentz. I mean, clips him with a hook, and he just falls flat backwards. Really looked out like something out of EA Sports UFC 5. Peyton Talbot then picks up his first win of the year. But the other Ayush is almost finished in round number one by Renato Moicano. And for some reason, Renato can't finish him. Made absolutely no sense. But then we end with a great three-fight run. Joshua Van and Brandon Royval is probably fight of the year. It's that legendary. It's that good. It's probably fight of the year. Alexander Pantoa makes light work of Kaikara France. And then Ian Topuria, faceplant knockouts. Charles Oliveira, I mean, literally sends him flat to his back. I mean, the year of Oliveira, of Ian Topuria, I wish it would have been. This was his only fight of the year. And the fact Charles Oliveira was actually able to fight his way back and pick up a win later in the year made this so much better. But Ian Topuria, Charles Oliveira made this night. I remember I was in the middle of a bar watching this, and I was going utterly ballistic. It was so entertaining. After that, we had the 4th of July off before UFC Nashville took place. Derek Lewis versus Dalshan Teixeira was the main event, and we had a number of finishes on this card. Fatima Klein, head kick knockout of Melissa Martinez. Mike Davis, TKO of Mitch Ramirez. Walter Walker, another heel hook. Absolutely love that. Jake Matthews submitting Chidi Chukani with a little standing backpack rear naked chokehold. Chris Curtis won a split decision. Tuco Tucos with a massive upset of Junior Tafa. Vitor Petrino making his heavyweight debut, making easy work of Austin Lane. And Morgan Tree and Nate Landry putting on a fantastic fight of the night and leading to a round 3 knockout for Morgan Cherie. Steve Garcia then did everything in his power to finish Calvin Kattar, but Calvin just wouldn't bow down. And Gabriel Bonfim and Wonderboy Thompson, what a fight. What an underrated fight on this card. Absolutely loved it. And no better way to cap off the card than with Derek Lewis knocking out the cocky Dalshan Teixeira in 35 seconds. I mean, clipped him, knocked him down. People were complaining about the finish, but I saw nothing wrong with it. I honestly might go rewatch that after I'm done recording this. That's how much I loved that knockout. But Nashville was all right, you know, whichever way you look at it. After that, we headed to New Orleans, Louisiana for UFC 318, which was, of course, the retirement fight for Dustin Poirier. And, you know, it was emotional. It was emotional. This is actually the same day I moved out of my college apartment, house, whatever you want to call it. Basically a townhome, if you will. Super fun times there. And I ended up by watching UFC 318. And we started off with just an electric run of knockouts. You know, Carly Giudice, knee knockout to Nicole Cagliari. Bruno Ferreira, round one armbar. Ryan Spann submission. Jimmy Crute submission. Islam Dulatov knockout. Ateba Gaudier knockout. Then, you know, run the mill decision. And then oddly won fight of the night. You know, Marvin Vettori versus Brendan Allen was a good fight. It was a good fight. But to win fight of the night on this night just didn't make sense. You know, there were two others that really stuck out to me. Daniel Rodriguez and Kevin Holland was, for some reason, insane. And it felt like Kevin Holland should have ran through Daniel Rodriguez. And instead, Daniel took it to him and Daniel won the fight. It made absolutely no sense, but that should have won fight of the night, if not the main event. Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier. How about the fact Dustin Poirier knocking down Max Holloway? That was insane. And, you know, Dustin went out on his shield, fought five rounds, and, you know, honestly, end of the day, it was a 49-46, 49-46, 48-47, you know, scorecards, which I agree with, but, hey, he went out on a shield, he fought hard, and there was nothing for him to be disappointed about there. There was only one way to go out for the Diamond Dustin Poirier show. Shout out to Dustin. After that, we ended July with a fantastic main event. Rainer de Ridder and Robert Whittaker, one of the closest main event decisions of the year, one of the closest decisions, period, genuinely went to the judges' scorecards, and I was like, you could give either man the victory, and I wouldn't be complaining. But also on this card, you had Steven Huynh landing 6 knockdowns, a new UFC record over Muhammad Yaha. I mean, insane. All of them punches, too, which makes it even crazier. You had my boy Ibo Aslan losing another decision. The year of Ibo Aslan ended up him going 0-3, which I think is just hilarious. You had Tabitha Ritchie elbow knocking out Amanda Hevas. Love to see that. Muslim Salikov shocking knockout of Carlos Lille in 42 seconds. Bryce Mitchell's bantamweight debut. Bogdan Guskov knocking out Nikita Krylov. Shahram Magomedov having a fight of the night victory. And Peter Yan winning his first fight of the year. Little did we know he would become champion. I don't think anyone saw that taking place. But Rainer Day Ritter and Robert Whittaker, one of my favorite main events of the year. Then headed back to the Apex to start off August. And you know, some decent moments. Austin Bashir picking up his first UFC victory, submitting John Yannis. Ringo Nakamura landing a nasty head kick knockout of Nathan Fletcher. Neil Magny TKOing Elizio Zaleski Dos Santos. Esteban Rivovic and Elvis Brenner giving us a fight of the night, along with Chris Duncan and Matheus Rebecca giving us a double fight of the night. So this has only happened, I think, once, and it's they gave out two fight of the nights on the same night. Just utterly ridiculous. And then the main event, my boy Tetsuo Taira just mauling Hyung Sung Park. I kind of felt bad for Hyung Sung Park. You know, he took this fight on short notice. It shouldn't have been him here. It should have been someone else. But I think it should have been Amir Albazi. But Tetsuo Taira utterly just destroys Hyung Sung Park and finishes him a minute into round number two, which was pretty entertaining, if you ask me. We were then back in the Apex the next week, the 9th. Roman Dolidze, Anthony Hernandez. Anthony Hernandez might be on the short track for best performance of the year in a fight. I mean, he destroyed Anthony Hernandez in the striking, in the grappling. He was just taking him up just to pick him up and then slam him back down, and the finish was so nasty. I mean, literally like big brother, little brother walking away, like choking him in Roman taps. It was so awesome. Other than that, you had Christian Leroy Duncan landing a nice knockout over Eric Anders. Elijah Smith landing his famous slam finish of Toshiyama Kazama. Great knockout this year. Uros Medic and Gilbert Urbina. The fight starts off, Gilbert Urbina drops him in the first 10 seconds. They get back up, and then Uros Medic knocks him out 30 seconds later. 1 minute knockout for Uros Medic. And then Jocelyn Edwards, the knocking out Priscilla Cachoeira with just a nasty combo, like actually putting her out cold. Oh, just beautiful to see. And I believe on my predictions for this, I actually did really well. I think I did really well on this overall. But yeah, you also had Steve Ursic picking up a win, his first win in like 3 years. So good moment for him. After that, we headed to Chicago, and I wasn't actually in Chicago yet. I know everyone knows that I work in Chicago now and live there, but, you know, UFC 319, I think everyone hates on it for the main event, but truly, this was such a fun card. Kicking it off, Joseph Morales wins the Ultimate Fighter in the flyweight division with a triangle choke in round number two. Kareem Silva and Jakar Close both pick up victories. Alexander Hernandez shockingly knocks out Chase Hooper with 2 seconds left in round number one. Lupe Godinez absolutely outstrikes Jessica Andrade. Michael Okajacek knocks out Gerald Meerschaert. Bosinger Sarsakayev fights for the second time in 4 days, coming off of the Contender Series, and finishes Eric Nolan in round number two. Tim Elliott just destroys Kaya Sakura in the grappling. MVP and Jared Cannonier absolutely sucked. And then the best. I don't care. I know UFC 322 had some great back-to-back knockouts, but this one here, Carlos Prates over Jeff Neal and Leon Murphy over Aaron Pico, both round one spinning back elbows. I mean, just insane. Just insane. And I mean, the Carlos Prates and Jeff Neal one, that was awesome. But the Leon Murphy, Aaron Pico one, oh, that one truly came out of nowhere. It might win. I know we were going to do awards on this episode, like I said, but we're not doing them. But it may win knockout of the year for me. It was that freaking good. And then the main event. I know a lot of people found it boring, but watching Khamzat Chimaev just destroy Dricus du Plessis was utterly insane. 529 total strikes to 45. Gonna be the toughest thing to ever replicate ever. 21 minutes and 40 seconds of control time. Just insane. I mean, Khamzat Chimaev, an absolute beast, an absolute savage. Now we know that he can go 5 rounds and still remain in control. Just pandemonium. Pandemonium from Khamzat Chimaev in this fight. After that, we were heading off to Shanghai, China, which was, funny because I tried to stay up super late to watch this. It just didn't work out. Just absolutely fell asleep. But you had, you know, some fun finishes on here. Yuron Satibov getting us going with an Ezekiel choke over Dyer Nergose. Yizhan knocking out Weston Wilson, Cal Daukaus making a short notice debut against Michelle Pereira, or short notice return against Michelle Pereira. He's actually going to be on our list for bounce back fighters. I mean, this guy had left the UFC and had been gone a while and just comes back, two finishes, both in round one since returning, and this 43-second knockout of Michelle Pereira was awesome. Rong Zhu going 2-0 this year, I love to see. Charles Johnson's knockout of Loader Kavanaugh, so awesome. One of my favorite knockouts that's not going to be on a lot of people's radar this year, but Loader Kavanaugh's just backing up, and Charles just clips him with a hook, and Loader's lights just go out just like that. Taiyolake Naraji bounces back from his fight against, I believe it was, he made his debut here. This was like a legend out of China. He was pretty good. He had like a round one finish. Sergey Pavlovich and Waldo Cortez Acosta putting on a boring fight. Aljamain Sterling and Brian Ortega, no idea how that fight was even sanctioned. And then the chaos that was Johnny Walker versus Zhang Minyang. I thought Zhang had him out of there in round number one, and Johnny fought his way back. Zhang gassed out, and Johnny Walker picked up a round two TKO. Super fun times. Took off the next week, and then we were back September 6th in Paris. And honestly, from here on out, it was a crazy run for the UFC. In Paris, one of the best cards of the entire year. Only two fights went the distance on a 13-fight card. You can't beat that. You just can't beat that. Sam Hughes gets a submission. Renat Fakhradinov knocks out Andreas Gustafsson in 54 seconds. Robert Baziak lands his first UFC win with the knockout of Brad Tavares. Sam Patterson continues his run of round one finishes over Trey Waters. Cal Fernandez with a knockout of Harry Hardwick, which is kind of unfortunate. Harry Hardwick's legs are just absolutely torn apart. Ante Delage made his debut and knocked out Marcin Tybura in 2 minutes. Omar Sy bounced back from his first defeat of the year against Alonzo Menafield, knocking out Brenson Ribeiro in round one. You know, William Gomez, Robert Rajalan, kind of boring. Axel Sola, Rise McKee, just domination from Sola. Mason Jones and Bellagio Key, another comeback of the year. I mean, this fight was utterly insane. I completely forgot about this, but I have no idea how Mason Jones survived the onslaught by Bellagio Key. The nonetheless bounce back and finish him, oh, just utterly crazy. Really is. Honestly, I gotta write this down. I gotta write this down for comeback of the year. You know, I gotta throw in here Jones and O'Keefe, because this is an underrated one. I encourage everyone to go back and watch it. It was awesome. Then Modestus Bukauskas retiring Paul Craig in just brutal fashion, knocking about Cole to end round one, which is just crazy. Then Benoit Saint-Denis submitting Mauricio Ruffi. The year of Benoit Saint-Denis, he's probably going to win comeback fighter of the year. Just a great run for him. And then the main event, Imavov outdoes Cal Barallo over 5 rounds to earn himself the next title shot at middleweight. After that, we were back in the States, and we were down in Texas in San Antonio, to be more specific, for Diego Lopez and Gene Silva. This was UFC Noche, and got it going. Daniil Danchenko wins the Ultimate Fighter for the welterweight division. Little round one knockout. Excited to see what he does in the UFC. The 19-year-old Alice Pereira unfortunately loses her debut. Alden Carrillo wins his debut, knocking out Alessandro Costa in round number three. You had the absolutely comedic fight between Zach Reese and Cedric Dubas, where Cedric Dubas just pokes Reese in the eye and then is upset when the fight ends. Just absolutely ridiculous. Tatiana Suarez bounces back from her championship loss earlier in the year. You had Joaquim Silva dominating Claudio Puelles. Dusko Todorovic getting back in the win column. Santiago Luna knocking out Quang Lee. Oh, my boy Quang Lee, sorry to see that. Alexander Hernandez knocking out Diego Ferreira. You had Kelvin Gastelum getting back in the win column. Rafa Garcia's nasty knockout of Jared Gordon. Then David Martinez, who some of you may not know, might be the rookie of the year, as this man went from unranked, you know, making his debut earlier this year against Samuel Oliveira, to fighting Rob Font and winning. He's now ranked number 10. I don't know between him and Peyton Talbot. I mean, it's tough to say, because he's ranked higher than Talbot, but, you know, for some reason, he's the only fighter that debuted this year that is now in the top 10. Well, I guess besides Ante Delage, but in terms of actually rising up to the stakes, I mean, a great year for him. Then the main event, fight of the night, performance of the night, Diego Lopez's knockout of Gene Silva. The entire fight is just electric. It could end at any second, and it just shows there's levels to this. And to make matters better, Diego Lopez got a title shot off of this. I mean, that is just utterly insane, and it was such a good moment. Then took off the 20th because it was Wrestlepalooza. Oh my gosh, the absolute disaster that was WWE. But then we ended September in Perth, Western Australia, and it gave us some great moments. Brando Parrish actually getting a knockout in the heavyweight division. We need heavyweights, and if you get a finish, that's good. Colby Thickney's winning his fight after unfortunately having to fight Alexander Topira earlier in the year. Cam Ralston coming in off of season 9 of the Contender Series, finishing Andre Petrovsky in round 1. Navajo Sterling remaining undefeated. Tom Nolan getting a big finish over Charlie Campbell. Neil Magny having another comeback of the year nominee against Jake Matthews down two rounds, submits him in round number three. Just kind of a weird fight, though, because everyone thought Neil had tapped. Turned out he didn't tap. They restart the fight. He submits Jake Matthews. Weird how that works. Jack Jenkins bounces back with a win. Then Jimmy Crute and Carlos Ulberg end it for the Australian boys. Jimmy Crute with a round one rear naked choke. And then Carlos Ulberg just mutilates Dominic Reyes. Yeah, 11 significant strikes to 5. It didn't take much to put Reyes out of there. And Carlos Ulberg might be fighting Alex Barra next. Now, I don't know yet. There's word Alex Barra might be moving up to heavyweight, which, by the way, would be awesome, which would mean Jiří Procházka versus your boy, Carlos Ulberg. But speaking of the man, UFC 320 was one of the best events of the year. UFC 320 might be event of the year. I kid you guys not. Get it going, you know. Prelims are kind of whatever. Ramiz Brahimaj gets a finish. Farid Bashrat remains undefeated. Yana Santos bounces back with a win. Edmund Shahbazyan knocks out Andre Munez, which was awesome. Jacob Wickelax wins his debut against Patchy Mix. Daniel Santos knocks out Jusei Yu in dominant fashion. And then Ateba Gaudier murders Tristan Vines in 1:41. But then, the main card just awesome. Just another 5 out of 5 main card. There was only 2 this year. UFC 311 and UFC 320 were all 5 fights delivered. This was one of them. Joe Pyfer submits Abus Magomedov in round number 2. After losing round 1, Bro drops him, then submits him in round number 2. Yusuf Zalal then makes the easiest work of Josh Emmett I've ever seen. 1:38 armbar. I mean, quite literally, landed a takedown, immediately locks in an armbar, and that was that. Then, Jiří Procházka, Khalil Rountree Jr., down 2 rounds, starts swinging in round 3, and faceplant knocks out Khalil Rountree Jr. Oh, Jiří Procházka, 2 wins, 2 round 3 knockouts, both of them comebacks. I mean, Jiří Procházka, you're my favorite fighter on the roster. You have to be. Co-main event, Merab Dvalishvili and Corey Sandhagen. Bro almost knocked out Corey Sandhagen and landed 20 takedowns out of baby Merab. So unfortunate how he ended the year, as we'll mention in just a couple minutes. But, I mean, man, what a run it was up to this point. And then Alex Barra, Magomed Ankalaev, just the easiest rematch you'll ever see. I'm sure even GSP over Matt Serra wasn't as easy as this, because, I mean, Alex Barra, quite literally, clips Magomed. Magomed shoots a awful takedown, and then Alex Barra just starts landing elbows on him, and the fight's over in 1:20. I can't lie. It was hype. It was super hype, but it was a bit anticlimactic. Just a bit, just because of how fast it ended. I mean, it was really over. Just like, snap your fingers, it was over, but still, such a great night at UFC 320. After that, we were on the road to Brazil as Charles Oliveira bounced back with a submission win over Matheus Gamrot in the main event. You also had Deiveson Figueiredo winning, Joel Alvarez winning, Mario Pinto actually proving he's legit at heavyweight, knocking out Hinata Dinez, Con Offley proving he can bounce back with a round one submission, Michael Aswell getting a round one knockout, Rafael Fila with a round one Kimura, Vitor Petrino's faceplant knockout of Thomas Pearson. Oh, sorry, Thomas, Minnesota boy, but Vitor putting his lights out. Cool. Bia Mesquita, who he has mentioned earlier. I mean, she had a great debut at women's bantamweight. Excited to see what she does in 2026. And then, yeah, just number of finishes all around. UFC Brazil was a super fun time. After that, we were in Vancouver for UFC Fight Night. Day Ritter and Allen. It was supposed to be Anthony Hernandez, and he pulled out, and he was injured. And Brendan Allen steps in, and Brendan Allen somehow beats Rainer Day Ritter. I mean, you gotta be kidding me. Rainer Day Ritter was about to be Fighter of the Year, I kid you not. And then just choked it here. Couldn't even continue to round 4. Quit on the stool. Crazy. Can't even make it up. You also had some absolute doozies. Mike Mallett versus Kevin Holland. Ahmed Zahabi versus Marlon Vera. Just a lot of boring fights, but you gotta point out the positives. Drew Dober knocking out Kyle Prapalik. Charles Jourdain submitting Davy Grant in round number 1. Manny Fiora knocking out Jasmine Jastavicius in round number 1. Who saw that coming? Al Gorquin knocking out Cody Gibson. I loved that. That was in 1:21. I don't want to say I'm a Cody Gibson hater, but let's just say I enjoyed that finish. Then Yuji Balgori getting a finish. Melissa Cronin getting a finish. Steffi Luciano getting a finish. There were some highlights, but I swear all these Canadian cards just are never amazing. There's just something about that. And then we ended October with one of the worst events of the year, UFC 321. But there were some highlights. There were some highlights. Okay, let's point out the positives. So obviously started off 3 boring fights. But then Nathaniel Wood, Jose Delgado, what a fun, by the way, matchup. I loved that fight. Walter Walker completing his arc with 3 3 heel hook round one submissions in 2025, and his 4th straight. I mean, the legend of Walter Walker grew here with his win over Louis Sutherland. Ludwig Klein and Matus Rebecca had a bloody fight of the night. You had Quinlan Sakiyad's head kick knockout of Nazar Kakbasrat, which is on the list for knockouts of the year. Osmat Mirzakhanov putting Rakic's lights out. I mean, get this. Osmat Mirzakhanov knocked Rakic out with 3 punches. 1 knockdown, 3 punches. That's insane. I've never even seen that. Then Alexander Volkov, Holt Almeida, one of the worst fights of the year. And to make matters worse, the decision went to Volkov, which made absolutely no sense. But it kind of righted the wrongs because he had lost a bogus fight to Gon last year. So this was just the MMA universe just making everything well again. Then Umar Nurmagomedov, Mara Batista, very entertaining fight, showing the high levelness of Mara Batista and the skill level of Umar Nurmagomedov. And then a lot of people hated it, but I liked Mackenzie Dern and Virna Jandidova. I liked it because Mackenzie Dern was winning, and I'm a Mackenzie Dern fan, and I'm kind of a Virna Jandidova hater because I think she's boring, but they both earned my respect. They both put on a great performance, and I think they both deserve their flowers here, and especially with Zhang Weili leaving the division for now. She's obviously coming back next year, but Mackenzie Dern, great win here, and I thought it was entertaining. And then the disaster, which was Ciryl Gane versus Tom Aspinall. To make matters worse, Tom Aspinall is still milking this. Now, am I going to discredit him for getting poked in the eye by Ciryl Gane? Absolutely not. Ciryl Gane should be at fault. But just how it all went down, it was just so performative, if you will. It was just so dull. But we were done with that, and we got into November, and November and December were just such great ways to end the year. And for our final 3 Apex events, honestly, not too bad. UFC Vegas 110, Steve Garcia versus David Onama, actually pretty decent. I mean, we get things going. Talita Alencar gets a rear naked chokehold submission with 20 seconds left in the fight. Seokjeon Ko picks up a win over Phil Rowe. He also had Norma Dumont basically becoming the number one contender at women's bantamweight. Dante Johnson winning his debut coming off of season 9 of the Contender Series. Billy Alacana completing his year going 2-1 with his only loss coming to Bogdan Guskov. Timmy Kwamba picked up his first UFC victory. Alan Nascimento bounced back with a finish. Charles Radke bounced back. The betting scandal between Yadier Delvalle and Isaac Dalgarian. Remember that? And they cut Dalgarian for it. Very suspicious. You then had Thema Garimbo getting defeated by Jeremiah Wells. The Rock is not happy about that. And then the co-main event and main event are both round one knockouts. Walter Cortez Acosta gets eye poked by Ante Delage. We think the fight's over. It actually is not. They restart it, and he knocks Delage out. The year of Waldo Cortez Acosta was still not over. I mean, this guy, Walter Cortez Acosta, is just a freaking legend. We're going to get to him in just a second. And then the main event, Steve the Mean Machine Garcia does it again. Round one finish of David Onama. The skill gap between Onama and Garcia was so far apart. We thought it was close, but no. Steve Garcia is miles ahead, and he was easily the biggest riser at men's featherweight. I know we can bring up, Diego Lopez. We can bring up Gene Silva, Lerone Murphy, but for Steve Garcia to take every opportunity they gave him and to jump into the top 8 and continue to get finishes, he really had himself a great year. After that, our second to last Apex event, UFC Vegas 111, had even more fun finishes. I mean, props to them. We started off Zach Reese, performance of the night, rear naked chokehold over Jadson McVeigh. Daniel Marcos submits Miles Johns. Josh Hokit coming off of season 9 of the Contender Series, 56-second knockout, and he's got a big fight coming up in 2026 as well. Jackson Cavalcante jumps into the top 10 at women's bantamweight with their win over Myra Bueno Silva. Ryanair Barcelos completes his year going 3-0 with 3 legit wins. Peyton Talbot, Cody Garbrandt, and Ricky Simone on this card. Just amazing. Jamal Emmers. I mean, remember Jamal Emmers? Here's a guy who was knocked out by Nate Landry last year. Went 2-0, and he picked up his last win of the year over Hydro Millhill. Just crazy how it works. And we end the card with 5 straight finishes. Christian Leroy Duncan, one of the best knockouts of the year over Marco Tulio. I mean, legit, putting his lights out cold. Chris Badilla putting everyone on notice, finishing Ishmael Bonfim. Juroš Medic getting back-to-back minute and 3-second knockouts. This one over Muslim Slikov, very odd. Very odd. Where are even the odds of that? Joseph Morales then submits Matt Schnell with a round one guillotine choke, and Gabriel Bonfim's knee knockout of Randy Brown was absolutely awesome. People were saying that was an early stoppage, like when they stopped the fight, Randy Brown's eyes were cross-eyed. I mean, that was just ridiculous. But second last pay-per-view of the year, UFC 322. Everything was trying to work against this, because this card had so much good. Starting it off, all right, run-of-the-mill decision, then Bosnir Susukayev wins his fourth fight of the year, third fight under a UFC banner, as he knocks out Eric McConkey in round number 3 in just a dogfight. I mean, legit, to eclipse him, he falls face down, covers his face, and Bossinger just steps over him. Legit. Fatima Klein becomes easily one of the biggest women's risers this year after debuting, defeating Angela Hill here. Pat Sabatini proves his grappling is really, really good, defeating Chepe Mariscal. Kyle Daukaus gets his finish over Joe Mearshart in 50 seconds. Ethan Ewing wins his short notice fight against Malcolm Allmaker. That was awesome. Aaron Blanchfield dominates Tracy Cortez. Gregory Rodriguez bounces back from his defeat earlier in the year, completing his run 2-1 with a win over Roman Kopilov. And then, the best four-fight knockout streak you may ever see. They all won performance bonuses. It's utterly insane. We started off Bo Nickel, Rodolfo Vieira. By the way, Bo Nickel was dominating Rodolfo Vieira. And then we get into round 3. Round 3, everything's going well. Then he sets up a head kick perfectly, and Rodolfo Vieira's lights go out cold. I mean, utterly nasty. You're like, this is a great way to head into the main card. We get the main card going. Benoit Saint-Denis, Benil Dariush, fight starts, all right? Going. Benil Dariush lands a leg kick, drops Benoit Saint-Denis. They get to the, get on their feet, grab each other the clinch. 3 shots from Benoit Saint-Denis, and Dariush is knocked out in 16 seconds. I mean, oh my gosh, so hype. Following that, Carlos Prates, Leon Edwards. Leon Edwards just holding on to Carlos Prates in round 1. Just grappling him. Carlos isn't even fazed. We get into round 2. They're bouncing around for about a minute. And then the straight knockout punch that Leon Edwards puts his mound on his butt. And then a follow-up shot right to the gut. Not to the gut, right to the face, I should say. And Leon Edwards is knocked out cold. You're like, wow. Wow, that was amazing. We follow it up. Michael Morales destroys Sean Brady. 3 minutes, 27 seconds, knocks him out. And he becomes what? He might be the next number one contender at welterweight. Welterweight is the healthiest it's been ever. Ever. This is the healthiest, the wealthiest. I'm getting tripping over my words here. The healthiest the welterweight division has ever been. Like, it is amazing. And we're actually going to talk on UFC Qatar here. Like, literally on the next event I'm going to discuss with you, we're going to talk about another welterweight fight. I mean, welterweight, so good. And with 2 massive finishes here, just amazing. But then, like I said, this card was working against itself. And the main event and co-main event, both double title fights, just both one-sided boring fests. Just Valentina Shevchenko out-grappling Zhang Weili for 5 straight rounds to remain the number one pound-for-pound woman on the planet. Then Islam Makhachev grappling Jack Della Maddalena through 5 straight rounds to become the double champion. I mean, just boring. Just boring, and it sucks because, really, that Shevchenko-Zhang Weili fight sucked all the energy out of the arena. And then to make matters worse, Islam just couldn't finish Jack Della Maddalena. Didn't even really look like he was fighting that hard. And, yeah, UFC 322 would have been event of the year had the main event, even if just one of the main event or co-main event had delivered, but unfortunately, it didn't, but those 4 straight knockouts in a row were absolutely legendary. But after that, as I was saying, we ended out November in Qatar. Qatar was fun. Qatar was a lot of fun. You had Ismael Nurmagomedov's knockout of Ryan Loader, Alexander Topuria, Beksa Almakan's amazing fight, Abdulrahman Yakyayev getting another 30-second finish. Go watch Abdulrahman Yakyayev versus Rafael Sequeira on UFC Qatar. 33 seconds, lands a spinning back kick, lands a head kick knockout, lands a little rear naked chokehold finish, all in 33 seconds. Abdulrahman Yakyayev. These season 9 guys are honestly insane. You then had Asuel Mabayev submitting Alex Perez, which was awesome. Luke Riley's debut for Bogdan Grodd, finishing him in round 2. Kyoichi Horiguchi's return to the UFC. He destroys Kirill Limbekov. Loved that. Then Waldo Cortez Acosta completes his year with a minute and 22 second knockout of Shamil Gaziev. I mean, Waldo Cortez Acosta, he's going to be on the list of male fighters of the year. What a year for Waldo Cortez Acosta. Then Mytomek Orlbay lands just another crazy knockout of Jack Hermanson. Poor Jack Hermanson gets knocked out cold by Gregory Rodriguez. And what does he decide to do? Cut down to welterweight for the first time in his career in his late 30s. Gets knocked out cold by Mytomek Orlbay. Entertaining, but unfortunate. Volkan Ozdemir then knocks out Alonzo Menifield in dominant fashion. Ian Garry wins a run-of-the-mill decision over Bilal Muhammad, which I guess Ian Garry is now the number one welterweight on the planet. I mean, I know Islam is, but when we look at the number one contenders, it's Ian Garry. And then Armin Tsarukyan just grapples Dan Hooker to death and picks up a submission victory there. But Armin, working his way back to a tail shot, got to give him some props. And honestly, ended off November with a bang. Then we got into the final pay-per-view of the year, and a lot of fun. A lot of fun on here. We get it going. Myron Santos knocks out Muhammad Naivov. Mansoor Abdul Malik gets his first career submission over Antonio Tricoli. The fight of the night, in my opinion, between Iryl Baranowski and Ibal Aslan, just insane. Jalen Turner returns after retiring to kill Edson Barbosa. I mean, oh my gosh, the round one knockout was brutal. Bruno Fajera jumps into the top 15 with a win over Marvin Vettori. Barzayam shows the levels to this game, finishing Nazim Sadikov. Macy Barber finally gets a fight in, defeating Kareem Silva. Chris Duncan submits Terrence McKinney. Manuel Torres knocks out Grant Dawson. And then, the main card. So the prelims, by the way, amazing. 10 out of 10 prelims. Get going on the main card. Jan Błachowicz and Bogdan Guskov fight to a draw. Just so random. So random this fight went to a draw. Peyton Talbot retired Sami Cejudo in just trolling fashion. I mean, honestly, just destroyed him. And then, my boy Tetsuya Taro TKO's Brandon Moreno in round number 2. Loved to see that. And then, kind of just super unfortunate for the final two fights. And first up, the actual unfortunate one is Alexander Pantoa breaking his arm, you know, 26 seconds into their fight. And Joshua Van becoming the flyweight champion. Just crazy. Crazy year for Joshua Van. And, you know, circumstances aside, you know, he won the belt. He won the belt. And Joshua Van started the year ranked number 15 at flyweight and end of the year's champion. I don't know if anyone will have as great a run as he had this year. I mean, honestly, insane run. I mean, March beats the undefeated Ray Chizura. June defeats Bruno Silva, landing 3 knockdowns and knocking him out in round number 3. June, fight of the night against Brandon Royval, fight of the year, some are saying, and then December wins the belt. Just crazy. Just crazy. And then Petr Yan, Rob Doshelli, the main event, fight of the night. Just Petr Yan knew every trick in the book to defeat Merab. And, you know, Merab fought hard. These two went at it, but Petr Yan just got the better of him. And it's kind of unfortunate because I think it may have stopped Merab from winning fighter of the year. And I honestly, it's tough to say because he had 3 title defenses. He had, of all his fights, they were all amazing, but he lost the belt at the end of the year. So, you know, when we do our, you know, when we do our awards, you know, I'm going to have Joshua Van in there. He might win it. Islam Makhachev going to have it. Melkoso Acosta. Walter Cortes Acosta for sure. But I just don't know if I can give it to Yan. So, well, I'm not Yan to Merab. So we'll have to see. But props to Petr Yan. You know, finding his way back. He hasn't held this belt since 2021. How about that? And now he's finally champion again. Shout out Petr Yan. And then we ended the year, the freshest card in our minds. We just talked about it last episode. UFC Vegas 112. And it was entertaining. You know, we get a woman's knockout to kick off the card. Guillaume Pat had a bloody fight with Alan Frye Jr. Steven Asplund and Sean Sheriff giving us a fight of the night, round 2 knockout. Yaroslav Amosov's debut was pretty awesome. Melkoso Acosta, his head kick knocking off Morgan Tree, was legendary. And then we end the year with 2 round 1 finishes, or I guess Kevin Vallejos and Giga Chikadze was 1:30 into round number 2, but still an amazing spig back fist. And then Manel Cape becoming the first man to ever finish Brandon Royval by knockout. Amazing. Simply amazing. Absolutely loved it. And what a year. What a year for 2025. Easily, I would say the best year of me watching UFC. I will say this was the best year of watching UFC for me. And as you can tell, like these end of year recaps, we just spent an hour going over everything. It's crazy to think just how much happens in the year. And I'm excited to see what 2026 brings. You know, the UFC is dialing it up now. They're going to Paramount Plus. I hope it's entertaining. Fingers crossed. I don't want to expect too much, but they have kind of gassed themselves up. So with that, that is your official recap of the year for 2025. Wow. Wow. Over just like that. Blink of an eye. Blink of an eye, I tell you. But yeah, we're going to save our awards. I've elected to do that. We'll do that maybe the next episode or the episode after. But yeah, really good time. Really good time watching the UFC this year. So many memories. And I can look back at every single event and know where I was when I was watching it. And that kind of brings back more memories of what I was doing at the moment. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got for you guys on today's episode. And yeah, thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate it. You know, I have a, funny enough, I've actually recorded this over 3 days. You won't believe it when you stitch it together, but this is taking place over 3 days. So if you didn't know already, the Seahawks won against the Rams. What a game. What a game that was. But I'll get this uploaded. I'll get this out to you guys. And you know, whenever you're listening to this, I just want you to know you're awesome. You matter. And I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.